Hey guys, missing church last week, it was just reality, bad weather, and it was probably wise and all that. But we thought maybe the weather was going to be bad again today, but really glad it was kind of ended up being a non-event. And it was interesting for me to come back today. It felt different, and I missed you guys. I know you missed me too. But I missed it. And so coming back today, I'm almost glad we missed a week, but because it felt like it broke it out of the routine that you're here every week and you just kind of go through the motions. They don't really go through the motions, but kind of. And coming back today just felt like, wow, it's so nice to see everybody again. So I don't know, just weird. I like it. So today is Nida's 91st birthday. Happy birthday. And so I thought maybe we should, not going to sing. We're not going to sing because I'd blow you out. But we have all sorts of different levels of age groups in our church. We like that. We want that. So I'm going to kind of ask you if, we have kind of like 20-year chunks. There's that chunk of sageness. It's called 80 and above. That's a sage time of life. If you're 80 or above, could you stand up? I know. 80 or above, just want you to stand up. Yeah, 80 or above. This is like cool stuff. This is cool stuff, and I love that. And then there's that time of wisdom between 60 and 80 that we've been through enough that you go, well, I learned a lot of stuff, and hopefully you have some wisdom. If you're between 60 and 80, would you mind standing up? Just 60 to 80. 60 to 80. Oh, I love it. Okay, that's good stuff. All right, thank you. And then there's this other section of life between 40 and 60 that's all about wielding influence because you've still got a lot of strength, you've learned a lot, and you kind of wield influence, And if you're between 40 and 60, would you mind standing up? Yeah, that's a great time of life, man. Okay, cool. All right, and then between 20 and 40 is this incredible time of life of just having a ton of energy, learning, growing, exercising, not just in the gym, but, it's like, that's a great time. You're getting married, you have kids, you're getting this job, and then you get this other job one way or the other, and that's a great time of life, 20 to 40. If you're 20 to 40, would you mind standing just real quickly? Yeah, okay, you gotta like that. Okay, and then there's this incredible time of life called 0 to 20. That really is a great time. It's a challenging time of life, isn't it? It's all about learning who you are. That's the key event of all of life, 0 to 20, is about identity, figuring out who am I? And our world's telling them all sorts of strange things about who they are. But trying to learn who God made them to be is really critical. And they're a really important part of this church, 0. Now, a bunch of them are downstairs, right? Typically every week, about 65 of those are downstairs in the elementary school stuff. But we have some of those that are past that are up here with us. So you guys, if you're between 0 and 20, I know you hate me for this, but would you mind just standing up if you're 0 to 20? Hey, thanks, you guys. Some of them are back here. Some are over here. Some are over here. Thank you. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to take 2 minutes, and I want you to meet someone from one of those different generations and just say, man, I love you're a sage. I love that you've got wisdom. I love that you're exercising influence. I love that you've got all sorts of energy, and you're growing and learning, and I love the fact that you're learning who you are. I want to say hi to you, and you got 2 minutes to do it. Ready? Go. Well, like Jonathan said, we started a new series, and it's we're called Walk the Walk, a serious look at the book of James. And we really do want to take a serious look at this. It's kind of a unique book. In fact, if you really look at the book, whereas a lot of Paul's writings are what we call Christ-centric or very centered on Christ, this book of James doesn't center so much on Christ, though it doesn't ignore him in any way, but it's what we call theocentric or God-centered. And you can almost see exactly why James gets there. It's because his whole life, he'd grown up in a very God-centered culture. Very thinking about God the Father, God the one who made us, God the Creator, God the Sustainer, God the Redeemer. It's a very clear, very strong, very good Jewish mindset of God in the middle of the world. Now, Paul's reaching a bunch of Gentiles where they were like maybe a little less clear on exactly where God fit in the whole thing. Some of it was a little God-ish, but a lot of part of it was very, very secular in nature. And so the person of Christ was absolutely critical as he would present what he's saying, the Apostle Paul. But for James, he lived in a very God-centered world already. And so what he wrote was a very God-centered kind of approach. And so what we've called this is a very serious look at the book of James, the walk. Now, here's kind of our fundamental thought. Jonathan put it out there too, that if the church is going to be relevant in the 21st century, if you and I, if this church and every other Christian church in America is going to be relevant in the years to come, and I would suggest to you, I think there's a great opportunity, a great chance that the Christian church will become profoundly irrelevant in our culture. That we will be unneeded and unnecessary. That if we didn't exist, we would not be missed. I think there is a tremendous opportunity for that. But I believe that there is a tremendous opportunity, too, for the Christian church to be so relevant and so needed in this culture. But if we are going to be relevant, it is not going to be because of all the flash and bang and boom and all the fancy stuff. It is going to be because we are mature and we're trustworthy and we're faithful. And we will be relevant in the future. Now, not everyone may agree with everything, but where we stand and how we do it, I think will help us remain relevant. So, what does that look like? What would the book of James maybe have to offer us in that? So let's just go to the book of James. We covered this last week. I'll do this quickly. It's written by James, the half-brother, maybe the cousin, maybe the step-brother, you know, but somehow related to Jesus. But here's the deal. I'll just kind of put this little kind of quote thing in here. Excuse me. James understands the important issues that the church is going to face, the adversity that is happening. He totally gets it. There is the growing winds of war. So at the time that he wrote this, the Romans have started to really put the screws down on the Jews. And there is an increasing persecution. So not too many years after James writes this, we're going to find that the Romans destroy the temple and run every Jew out of Jerusalem. Not everyone, but almost all of them. Persecute them deeply and heavily. It's when we get Masada, when a bunch of Jews go off and try to protect themselves on a hilltop, and they eventually, the Romans, kill them all. In the midst of that, excuse me, I found out this week I have pneumonia. So I was like, okay, you know, but I got some really great medicine going, so it's really good stuff. In the midst of that, the Jewish Christians are beginning to be persecuted even deeper and being run out of Jerusalem and kind of thrown throughout the Mediterranean area. This is where not only Jewish churches, Christian churches, but also Gentile churches are beginning to develop. James saw this coming. He was in the midst of it. And so he stops to write some really important things to people, okay? So James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, that's how he saw himself, to the 12 tribes of the dispersion, not only the Jewish tribes that had been dispersed, but to the Christian believers, largely Jewish from his experience so far, who had been dispersed. He's writing to them, and here's what he says to them, and I know it's a short little word, it says greetings. He says greetings. So I just want us to remember this greetings is not like a hey, yo, you know, hey, how you doing? This word greetings means this. It means to experience and delight in God's grace. That's what he's saying to him. Hey, you guys, I'm writing you this, and I hope, I pray, I desire for you that you would experience and delight in the grace of God in the midst of all the trials that you're going through and all the difficulty and all the adversity and all the persecution and all the things that are happening in your life. I pray that you would experience and delight in God's grace. Wouldn't that be a great greeting for all of us to say to each other periodically? Hey, good to see you. We see each other at Schnucks. Hey, wow, great to see you. I hope you're experiencing the delighting in the grace of God today. Well, it might be a little weird, but it would really be beautiful, wouldn't it? It'd be really warm. It'd be full. It'd be really a great greeting. And that's what he says here in this letter. So then he says to him, and we'll not spend a lot of time there, but says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, when you meet them, when they are piled on you, and then when they are holes that you fall into. He's saying all these various trials that you go through, some of them you create yourself, right? Of course we do. Sometimes we're just do dumb things, and we create our own problems. And other times problems are piled up on top of you by other people, other situations, circumstances, things that you didn't even think about. He says, sometimes that's what it looks like. But he says, when you meet various trials, consider it counted all joy, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, maturity. That all steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Wow. So here's the big idea. Trials are the tool that God uses to grow your character and to make us mature. Trials are what God uses. Now, I don't know about you, but I could have found a better way. Right? I could have imagined a better way to do this. But actually, the more I think about it, the more I know I couldn't. It is difficulties that begin to forge in us something of value. And so that's what I think James is getting at here. So, now in the next several verses, we're going to divide it into four pieces. Okay? So it's like puzzle pieces. They seem to be almost disconnected, but they're actually not. And so we're going to put together these four puzzle pieces today and kind of say, okay, well, how does this relate to what he's getting at? So, okay, let's start with the first one. Let's start with verses 4-8. Look at this. He says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. Now, I don't know about you, right? In the middle of trials, don't you usually begin to ask questions? Like, why? What? What do I do with this? How do I respond? How do I handle this? Where do I go? What do I do? God, I need wisdom. I don't know. This is over my head. This is bigger than I expected. I didn't know what to do here. This is really, you know, really getting me. My heart is broken. I'm struggling. I feel terrible. I feel shamed. I feel defeated. I don't know what to do. Don't we feel that? And you begin to ask for wisdom. He says, if anybody lacks wisdom then on how to deal with these trials, let him ask God, and he'll give generously without reproach. God is not stingy. He wants to give us wisdom. He says, if you don't have it, ask, and I'll give it. But, look in verse 6, but, you could almost circle that, but we won't. But he says, but, let him ask in faith, without doubting. For the one who doubts is like the wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. Just back and forth, all over if you doubt. Verse 7, for the person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord if he is double-minded man, unstable in all of his ways. He says, God is a God who wants to give you wisdom if you need it. And when you don't have it ourselves, we can't create it out of our own ability, can't figure it all out. He says, I'd like to give it to you. Ask me. And I'll give generously. I'll give open-heartedly. I want you to know. I want you to have wisdom in the midst of life. Yes, he kind of says, I know you're not God. I'm God, he says. I know you're not God, and life is bigger than you, and it's sometimes more difficult, and sometimes more confusing. But I'd like to give you wisdom. I want to. That's my heart for you. I desire to do that. Wow. But if we're double-minded, then we just are like a wave going back and forth, and nothing produces. Here's what I think is the big idea. Let's go back to the box. Trials force us to need wisdom beyond ourselves and which God is pleased to give. Right? So let's not be arrogant and presuming it. Let's not be so arrogant and think, well, you know, I've got it all together, or he's just going to give, you know, make me the smartest guy in the world. I don't think we need to be arrogant or presumptuous, but let's not be wishy-washy, doubting his ability and his inclination. God said, I want to give you wisdom. I want to help you through this trial. That's his nature. So when you have trials and you're asking for wisdom, God says, I'd like to give it. That's what he's like. And you can begin to move forward. Stay teachable, stay flexible, but you can move forward. You don't have to get stuck. You don't have to be paralyzed. He said he'd give you wisdom. Wow. So sometimes you just have to say, okay, here's what I think you're saying. Here's what I think you're doing. I'm going to step out in faith and begin moving in that direction. And you can move me. You can direct me as you want to. But I'm going to trust you. You're going to give me wisdom in the midst of this trial, the difficult things that we deal with. Wow. I don't know about you, but that helps me deal with trials. All right. Now, let's go on to this next set of verses. 9 to 11, he kind of addresses something else. He says, let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation. The lowly brother, meaning the one who's poor, who has less struggling in life, maybe lower socioeconomic or maybe a racial situation or whatever it is that someone would feel the lowly brother, to boast in his exaltation. And you think, well, okay, what's that all about? Well, let's go on to verse 10. It says, and the rich in his humiliation. You go, oh, okay, so we're exalting in different things here. Because like a flower of the grass, he will pass away. The rich man will pass away. Doesn't last. All the stuff of life doesn't really actually last. In the trials of life, sometimes we begin to really focus on and kind of put our trust in things. Right? We do. Well, at least I've got money in the bank. Wish I had more money, right? John Rockefeller said, someone asked him one time, the famous rich man, he said, how much is enough? And he said, just a little bit more, just a little bit more. That's how we kind of live our lives, just a little bit more. But here he begins to say, the flower, it just goes away. For the sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the grass. Its flower fails, and its beauty perishes. So also will the rich man fade away in the midst of his pursuits. I think what happened, let's go to the box here. Trials force us to remember what is actually important in life, don't they? Trials actually help us remember that all the material stuff of this world means nothing in light of eternity. I've just been thinking a lot recently about students and how kind of figuring out life, that 0 to 20, and just what to do and how to act and all this stuff. I've been watching kids, who have great propensities academically, others athletically, others in different ways. And at the end of the day, I wish I had just thought about this when I was 0 to 20. That whether I'm going to be good academically or athletically or this or that actually means almost zero. What matters is their character. What matters is how they handle life. So whether they're going to be a professor or an electrical worker or a teacher or a businessman or doesn't really matter. What matters is their character. People of honesty, people of compassion, people of that will be able to engage the welfare of people. It's their character that matters, not their accomplishments. And I think we find out that the things that really matter have nothing to do with all the things that we collect to make sure that we have 3 cars rather than 2, because what if one breaks? Well, I got to have a third one, right? Or whatever it might be. All the stuff. Let's go back to that verse. Let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation. There is a beauty to not having a lot because you're reminded that life isn't made up of stuff. And there, let the rich boast in their humiliation to say, wow, I've got all this stuff, but it's not really, really important. It's nice, and I want to share it. But it's not that important to me because it's going to go away one way or the other. Trials force us to remember what it's actually important in life. Okay, now, this next section, verses 12 to 15, look at this. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. Kind of going back to verses 2, 3, and 4, right? He says, blessed is the man who remains steadfast in trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life which God has promised to those who love him. He had this crown of life. It kind of represents the fulfillment of what life was supposed to be if we stand steadfast in the midst of all these trials. Now, look at it in verse 13. As a result, though, let no one say to him, say when he is tempted, I'm being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, for he himself tempts no one. He is not the author of the evil and the trials in our lives. But, verse 14, but each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desires. Desire, when it is conceived, gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. Let's go to, here's kind of what I think it's saying here. Look at in this box. Trials have a deceptive side to them. Trials do. Trials come, and there's a deceptiveness to it. When we begin to think that God is somehow involved in trying to trip us up and take advantage of our weak spots rather than us taking responsibility for our sin. There is something about trials that begins to make us begin to question the veracity of God's character. Did we say, this is God doing this to me? This is God trying to take advantage of me. This is God trying to make it difficult. This is God who's kind of trying to play the tricky guy. See if he can trip me up. See if he can find me weak. See if he can put blame and shame on me. See if God's the one who's doing this. And we begin to question who he is, and we begin to make God weird and man right, rather than God right and man weird. Right? Because we're the weird ones, really. We're enticed and lured by our own stuff. And when we buy into it, we create sin, and sin creates death, and we destroy because of man's inability to do what God has called us to do. We have created this. We have created the mess of this world. God didn't create it. It was us. It's our responsibility. And sometimes trials make us begin to question who God is and begin to assign him what is evil and wrong and bad, rather than to us. That we are really kind of arrived. God somehow has digressed. And I think that that's a real danger in all of this. It's a deceptive side of trials, right? All right, now, let's top this thing off with verses 16 to 18. Let's just go 16 and 17 first. It says, do not be deceived, my beloved brothers. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights. It's an interesting title, isn't it? The Father of lights. Lights in the scriptures almost always represent good things. Darkness almost always represents evil, sin, destruction, death, which is a place where we like to hang out in the darkness. He is the Father of all lights, of good, compassionate, glorifying, beautiful, life-giving. Light, there's something beautiful about light. See, every good gift and every perfect gift comes down from him. He is the giver of beautiful things. That is his nature. That's what he's like. That's what he likes to do. Do you see God that way? The one who desires good gifts for you and perfect gifts. Not to make you spoiled, but to bless you. That's what he wants. That's what he's like. For all of us. It's hard for us to see it because we live in such a messed up world. It's hard for us sometimes to get our arms around that. They come down from the Father of all lights. You see, he doesn't just possess light, he is light. He doesn't possess love, he is love. He doesn't just possess it, he is it. In his nature, in his character. Wow. With whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. He doesn't change. He's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. He's never changed. And it doesn't mean that he's stuck. It means he's so immensely amazing. And he's been it from the very beginning, and he always will be. Wow, that's what he's like. And we begin to question that in the midst of trials. We begin to struggle with that. That's part of being human. But this is the nature of who God is. So let's go to a box. Let's kind of fill out the last piece of the puzzle. Trials' deceptive side prevents us from seeing God for who he actually is. Trials sometimes prevent us from seeing him for who he actually is. And he is the giver of every good gift. He is the Father of lights. He is never changing. He is always faithful. That's who he is in the midst of all this stuff we go through in life. And we all go through it, right? I mean, have you ever been under the pile? You know, and you think, well, what am I doing under there? Well, here's the nature of life. You're either headed for a pile, you're under a pile, you're headed for the next pile. That is the nature of life. Let's just accept it, you know? And we hate it, right? We're like, no, it's not supposed to be this way. It's supposed to be smooth sailing. Well, I'm just telling you, this world is conflict-oriented, and it's full of piles. And most of them you can't avoid. These trials are things you work through. You don't go around. You don't go over them. Sometimes you think, well, you know, I'm just living above everything. Well, then you're living in denial. Let's face it. You know, you're out of your mind. You, guess what? Trials, you work through them. You don't avoid them because they'll catch up to you. Because you're either headed for one, you're in one, or you're headed for the next one. That's the nature of life. And guess who's going to be there with you? The Father of lights, the one who never changes, the one who pours down good gifts from heaven above. That's who's going to be with you in the midst of it. You go, well, I don't see him. I know, sometimes we don't see it. But guess what? That doesn't change. That he's still there. And he wants to get our attention. So look at this. We'll just wrap it up with verse 18. Of his own will, he brought us forth by the word of truth. By his will, he brought us forth. This was his idea. You were his idea. You. Where you were born, where you grew up, what happened, how it unfolded, what he's doing now, this was his idea. You are his idea. And so as we say, of his own will, he brought us forth by the word of truth. He is speaking truth into this world and into you, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures, that we would be this unique expression of him as his creatures on this earth. Wow, you guys, you are his idea of his will. So am I. As squirrely and weird and up and down and in and out and wrong and right as I can be, somehow he says, Kevin, I want to be involved in your life. I want you to be a kind of first fruits of my creatures. I'm doing something unique in you. And I want to use you, and I want to use your character. I want to develop your character. So here's the deal. Here's what I think I'm going to wrap up this comment. God has willfully and purposefully created us to enjoy and demonstrate his beauty in a world that has forgotten who he is and what he is like. And here's the crazy thing. And he is using the trials of our lives as a tool to do it. He is using the trials of our lives as a tool to willfully and purposely demonstrate his beauty in the world through us. Wow. Only a God could do that. And as a result, you can do this. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet various kinds of trials, so that you know the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete and lacking in nothing. Let him do his work. In the midst of when you need wisdom, in the midst of all the stuff you may or may not have, in the midst of questioning what he's like and understanding who he really is and living that life. So here's the bottom line again. If the church is going to be relevant in the 21st century, it will have to be mature, trustworthy, and faithful. And here's the deal. The church is you and me. The church is you and me. And so we need to be mature and trustworthy and faithful. I think that's what James is doing. He's talking about here. So, it's going to be a great challenge. And in the midst of life, because it's there, right? The piles are there. You're either in one right now. We could have it, we do the stand up again. We could have the people in the middle of a pile right now. Go ahead and stand up. No, I won't have you do that. Or the ones who know, hey, I'm headed for a pile. Or maybe you're like, I just got out of a pile, and I'm wanting not to go to the next one. But I know it's going to come. We need to be mature. So here's the deal. Let's put these boxes back up here. These four. Here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to take a couple of minutes, and I'd like you to pick a box that maybe where you're at right now. Okay? I'd like you to pick a box and say, okay, you know what? Right now, I just need God's wisdom. Man, I need it. And he said he'd give it to you. And I want you to pray, God, give me your wisdom. Submit, kind of surrender. Or maybe you're saying, I'm in the midst of trying to figure out what's really important in life, and I've gotten caught up in all the stuff. Or maybe I've been reminded about the stuff in the way. That's kind of where I'm at. Maybe that's where the box you're in. Or maybe you're over here in this box 12 to 15, that deceptive side where you're beginning to blame God, question his veracity, his character. Or maybe you're over in this other one saying, you know what? He's the one. He's the one who's the Father of lights. I recognize that. I want to dig into that. I want to acknowledge that. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to apply this right now. I want you to take a few minutes and just wrestle with those four boxes. Pick a box. And relate to yourself and to the Lord about that, okay? Because, and then to say, God, what do you want to do in me to make me more mature? What do you want to do in that to make me more trustworthy? What do you want to do in that to make me more faithful? What do you want to do, God? And then surrender to it. Let him do his work. Okay? So literally, take a few minutes. Wrestle with it this morning, okay? Father, we recognize at the end of the day that we are limited human beings. I don't think we actually like that. I want to be more. I want to have more power, more ability, more. I think I want to be more. I think it really was, I want to take your position in this world. I want to be in charge. I want to be in charge of my life, and I want to be in charge of others, and somehow I want to be more, but I'm not. And when life happens, it reminds all of us of our need for your wisdom, because we don't have it all. And we acknowledge that you said you'd love to give it. And Father, sometimes I make my world about all the stuff. And it's not about the stuff. It's about something far more profound, far more important. About your character wanting to be infused in ours. And Father, sometimes I make for sure I blame you for all the stuff, all the messed up part. I think I'm above you. Father, it is so my sin to do that. It's my messed upness. And we acknowledge this morning that you are the Father of lights. You are the one who never changes. You are the one who is reliable and trustworthy. And you want to do a serious work in our lives. That sounds a little ominous. That sounds sometimes scary because I'm not sure I believe that you are good, and that you'll do good things in me, in us. But Father, as we see who you are in the person of Christ, we see someone who is full of both truth and grace. Who will tell us the truth, but he'll do it with grace. And someone who will give us grace combined with the truth that allows us to grow so that we might be complete. We might be full. We might be mature. And I pray that you would do that in each one of us in some way this week to make us more like yourself. So together, we wrestle with you and we commit ourselves to your work in our lives.